What would you like to drink? Speaking as a man who maintains a well-stocked cellar on board his yacht, you might be surprised to read that I'm not about to sound off about drink sale legislation, although this is an area where we Brits could learn a lot from our neighbours across the Channel. The French have a refined way of dealing with ill-considered interference that purports to fix what is clearly not broken. They ignore it, as will we on this occasion, secure in our anchorage with no other vessel in sight. Mine's a large malt, skipper. The sparkling tumblers are laid out on the saloon table as the thirsty soul nearest the booze locker gropes inside. Like a knight of old reaching for the holy grail, he grasps the simple bottle. The cork pops, and the best of the distiller's art, combined with 15 years of aging, splashes into the glasses. But wait, are they glasses at all? Or are they, perish the suggestion, plastic imitations? Let's hope not. Why should we suffer the tortures of the damned at sea for days on end, then finish by insulting one of man's sublime creations? My crew will have none of it. They demand their tincture from heavy crystal, just as we all do at home. Ah, howl the vendors of pricey Perspex replicas. But what about your safety? And have you considered the cost of replacing all those smashed glasses? Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I've been considering for the 30-odd years since I first slipped my lines with an earthenware dinner service I'd had for a wedding present and a set of proper drinking vessels. I can count the number of glasses we've broken in the intervening decades on one hand, although my china mugs do get a bit chipped from time to time. We give the plates a holiday by eating off wooden ones in rough weather at sea, and it wasn't until last summer that someone finally smashed the very first wedding gift. Our insistence on not slumming it on board has proved neither expensive nor dangerous. By now, you've probably written me off as some sort of reactionary snob, but it gets worse, because next I'm going to discuss what we choose to build our boats from. Most of us, of course, opt for fiberglass. Indeed, any sailor with no axe to grind could fill a book with good reasons why any dissenter from this would be a certifiable loony. GRP doesn't rot. It can be as strong as the builder cares to make it, and because it's relatively low-tech by today's standards, it's comparatively easy to repair. It has few fastenings to let go at inconvenient moments. It requires no caulking. It doesn't rust like steel, and its owners are not subject to the sort of tiny leak paranoia that infests the private lives of those with composite craft. If Plastic Man's forehatch drips a bit, the worst that happens is that his wife gets wet in bed. Not much to complain about there. It's an ancient tradition of the sea. Anyone whose boat is made of wood, or sandwich construction, or epoxy over softwood, or steel, can't sleep with a drip, because it means the water is getting into the fabric, and who knows where that will end. Why, then, do people still build new wooden boats? Pragmatic steel I can understand, because not only can it be literally bulletproof, it's as easily patched up as GRP anywhere in the world by a bold owner with a gas axe. Wood's a different kettle of fish altogether. People with wooden boats, and I was one of them for most of my life until I went the epoxy route, are generally passionate about their choice. The younger ones, as I well recall, construct a card house of arguments to show why timber is the best possible material. Older devotees tend to sit back quietly when the subject is raised. If pressed, they'll say, as I would, "I like wood. It suits me, it's natural, and I love the smell." I'd rather be laying sweet-smelling yacht enamel onto my topsides on a spring morning than polishing them with a noisy electric buffer. I can readily modify my boat because all I have to do is pop in a screw, and I take home a serious helping of job satisfaction by keeping up with the maintenance. You have to admit it looks great when I've done. I know I spend as much time working as sailing, but the more I put in, the more I get out. That's my choice. To find the ultimate truth in such issues, we sometimes have to wait for the very end, when we all must sail that last lonesome traverse single-handed. Two men who've spent their lives around the water, one in middle years, the other elderly, were recently conducting the burial at sea of a traditional boat builder who had hated all things synthetic. The open fishing vessel carrying the funeral party out to sea with the ashes was struggling against a rising headwind. The spray flew aft with each wave, and the mourners were making heavy weather of it. Finally, still well short of their destination, the younger man stole a glance at his shipmate. Their eyes met in seamanlike sympathy. They took off the boat's way, and they let her drift. "Harold would understand," said the older man, as his shipmate opened the finely crafted teak casket to scatter their friend's last remains. And lo, the ashes were wrapped in a heavy plastic bag.